Menu says I show all the unmistakable symptoms of being in love and she's overjoyed that I am blooming at last. But she's wrong. She's in no position to judge because she considers everything from her earthly standpoint. She can't begin to understand that I cannot and must never fall in love. And that I'm not in love now. How could I ever fall in love with this uncouth, unkempt, red-headed giant? He's not my type. Physically, he seems strange, even repulsive to me. In my moments of self-examination, I have often asked myself whether I could want to have a child by him. Heaven forbid. A child with such ears and such an ungainly, raw-boned body? Never. In any case, I know absolutely I'd never want to have a child by him. So I know I'm not in love. I only want him to find God. I am keenly interested in each of my pupils, and for this very reason I think of him so often and with such a concentration of all my attention. But he hasn't found God yet. In this point I haven't yet succeeded. That's why I feel so sad and anxious when I realize he is soon going to have to leave our country, and I may never see him again in this life. Then everything happens faster than a flash of lightning. On our last evening together I go to the temple to see him and take leave of him. As usual, he's leaning against the wall. But now he doesn't try to seem so superior the way he did when he waited here for me the first time. Now he doesn't even look at me, but stands there staring off into space. What's the matter? I ask him. I'm just trying to think what kind of sense it makes for me to have been coming here to see you every evening. What did you want of me, you beautiful queen with no heart? What use have I had out of all the things you've told me if they've only served to make me unhappy? You've talked on and on about my having to find myself. But with every one of your words and deeds you've helped to make me lose myself completely. I was a brave, courageous fighter, afraid of no one, and now I've become a slave. The slave of a tiny woman who hardly comes up to my shoulders. And now I'm afraid of the future. How am I going to be able to live without you? A hot wave of joy floods through my being. I tried to imagine it's only my vanity. But I feel a shock. In the beginning I really did want him to recognize my feminine beauty and power, and as soon as I had achieved that I wanted to use my power over him to help him on the inner path. I took all kinds of pains to awaken the self within him. But instead, he's fallen in love with me. I didn't want to go that far. I don't want earthly love. I've wanted to create with him a far higher unity, the unity of the self. I wanted to lead him to God. But it's done no good at all for me to bring forth the deepest truths from out of my inner being. He sees me only as a woman. He cannot or will not rise above the sensual. He doesn't see me. He doesn't realize that he does not love me. I don't really exist for him. He merely loves my body. The outer cloak, which is merely a manifestation of my true self. How horrible. How debasing. Look, I say. Trembling, it hasn't made any sense at all for you to come here to see me, because we just don't understand each other. We just can't get together. I want to help you rise to the spiritual plane, and you want to drag me down to the level of the body. It hasn't made any sense at all to go through all this trouble. Go back to your homeland in peace, and we'll never meet again. At these words, the blood rushes to his head. His face. His neck. The whole man becomes dark red, so dark his hair seems lighter than his skin. His eyes flash like glowing embers, and with a shock I see his whole spiritual body turning into a powerful flame. Then, without my having time to defend myself, he seizes my arm, holding it as if in iron tongs, pulls me to his mighty breast, embraces me, pushes my head backward, presses his mouth to my lips with such force that I lose my breath. Then he kisses my face, my neck and my lips again, and in between his burning kisses, he whispers hoarsely, "So you don't want to see me anymore? But I want to see you, and we'll meet again. We'll meet again." As I saw his wild face coming close, I felt a wave of deathly panic. I wanted to push him back and get away, but as he locked me in his mighty arms and pressed his burning hot mouth upon my lips, all my inner being caught his fire. I lost control over myself, and without resistance I gave in to the overpowering feeling of pleasure and delight that sprang up out of my fright and swept through me. Now I realize I love him. Have loved him from the first moment. With all my body and soul. With my whole being I love him passionately and I always will. The fire overwhelms me as if coming forth from a gigantic volcano. Hot flames sweep through me. Devour me. My backbone feels like a bridge of glowing embers, holding seven burning torches. But now I'm no longer in the immovable axis of my spinal column, no longer in the midpoint from which my true self radiates the fire of life. On the contrary, my consciousness has fallen into my burning body, and sparkling, crackling, flashes of lightning race through my veins. Through my whole being. All my nerves are aglow, all my thoughts blotted out. They're burning out my consciousness. Annihilating me. Then I black out and everything disappears. Little by little I come to again. Slowly I open my eyes. See stone walls around me. I am lying on the floor of my little cell. I am alone. Surrounded by the silence of a tomb. I have no thoughts. I haven't anything I could think about anymore. Dejected and broken, I get up, cover my weary head with my veil and leave the cell. The long colonnade is dark and seemingly empty. After a few steps I see a dark form leaning against the opposite wall, Ima. He stands there as if made of stone, staring at me with an indescribably wild look in his eyes. Even in the darkness I can see it. Have to see it. He looks right into me. Right through me. Then he turns and walks away softly in the opposite direction. Without a thought in my head I go back to the palace. Menu, who had fallen asleep in a corner of the temple court, accompanies me, as usual in silence, except for an occasional loud yawn. The lion I lie on mine ease before Tahoteb. I do not speak. He understands my unspoken words, even when I am silent. Father of my soul, save me. Take this fire out of my body, give me back my freedom. I cannot and will not go on living this way. I lost myself, I am destroyed, I no longer have any control over myself, I can't think anymore what I'm doing, my thoughts control me and split my head apart. Help me, Father of my soul, help me back to the heavenly heights where spiritual clarity, purity and freedom reign. Give me back my wings so that I may fly again with you on high like the creative power of God, the divine hawk Horus, who flies through the universe creating new worlds. Open up heaven for me again, Father of my soul, let me hear the music of the spheres again. The music that now lives on only in my memory, while within me there reigns only the silence of the tomb because my ears are deaf. Open my spiritual eyes again. Father of my soul, for they are burned out, I see the light of heaven and the brilliance of God only in my memory, while within me there is only darkness as my inner eyes have become blind. Open for me the gate of my heavenly home where I once possessed all the treasures of the spirit that now live only in my memory, Father of my soul, because I have fallen and have become a poor earthly beggar. Open up again for me the happiness and the peace in the divine unity of those who have found salvation, Father of my soul. The unity which now is mine only in memory as I have fallen into the wilderness, into the desert, haunted and plagued unceasingly by the burning unrest of being torn in two. Lay your blessed hand upon my head and permit me to be freed from the dungeon of time. Permit me to become again in the eternal present the person I was. The person I really am. The person I can no longer be in the elusive world of appearances. Father of my soul, save me, save my soul. Permit me to hear your voice again, like the voice of God within me, for I no longer hear your answers. I am blind and deaf, I have lost my heavenly wings, I have become as one expelled, one driven out in exile. Take me back, Father of my soul. Take me back into the unity of the blessed, because I can't go on living this way. Save me, Father of my soul, Save me, you man of God. Do not leave me. Do not leave me. Do not leave me. But I hear no answer. I have lost everything. My intellect that has always been there to help me onward is foggy. Only hazy thoughts creep through my mind like tired travelers. On my bed in the palace I lie with one and only one thought in my head, to die. I can't go on living, I won't go on living. I am only the shadow of myself. Through the mists in my mind, hazy faces rise up to harass me, Menu, crying hopelessly, and Bergar. The despairing eyes of Bergar. I want to die. To die. I used to be master of my body and could leave it intentionally at will. Now I try it, but without success. I cannot leave my body. It's as if I were nailed into it. I can't leave it. I've become a prisoner in the dungeon of matter. I want to go to the Ark of the Covenant. It will burn up my body just as its radiation burns up the dead sacrificial animals in the temple. So completely that not even a trace of ash is left. I put on my veil and hasten to the temple, through the great hall, onto the door that opens into the underground passage to the Great Pyramid. But I can't get through. Before the stone door I run up against an invisible wall. It begins to dawn in my hazy brain, the lowest frequency of the Ark of Covenant, ultramatter. Materialized hate. Although completely invisible, it protects the forbidden area better than the strongest wall. I try again to break through the invisible barrier, but the unbelievably hard wall of ultramatter stops me unmercifully. There is no mercy for me. No mercy. Slowly I go back through the long temple passage, past my own little cell. Without thinking, I go in and sit down on the stone bench. I sink back into memories. The room expands, from every side I hear the echo of infinity. And within me pictures emerge, a figure, wrapped in hazy fog, approaches Ein. I recognize it, the hazy figure I saw in my vision when I was being initiated. It comes quite close to me, then a flame spurts out of it, the whole figure begins to burn and becomes a fiery being who irresistibly embraces me, encircles me and penetrates me so that I too catch fire and begin to burn. Then I hear his voice whispering to me, I told you we would meet again. You belong to me, you will never again be free of me, we will meet again. In endless time and in timeless infinity we will meet again, again. And the echo of his voice goes on repeating thousands and thousands of times, meet again. Meet again. Meet again. No. I cry, I will not, I hate you. The figure of fire laughs, as long as you hate me. You love me and I have power over you. You can't get free as easy as that. We will meet again. The echo goes on calling. As I hear this voice echoing back thousands of times from every direction in the empty room, so powerfully that the air itself literally vibrates with it, I know the hazy figure of fire is whispering and looking at me with voice and eyes I can no longer resist. In all the endless lives I was able to remember in the vision I had during my initiation, I was always seeking the same voice and the same eyes in all the voices that spoke to me and in all the eyes that looked at me and in all the countless men I met in all those countless lives. In all these men I was seeking the man whom I love with love eternal and with every drop of my blood, the only man, my man, the image and likeness of my complementary half. Then another picture flashes upon my mind, the picture of the man whom I do not love as my complementary half, but as myself, Ima. I could not love him with earthly love because I was always one with him in God. We are bound together by the eternal love of heavenly unity. I will go to him now, I will tell him everything, he will understand me. The unity that binds me to him will lead me like a light in my further travels. This unity will illuminate my darkened path so that I can find my way back into the heavenly home I have lost, to God. I rush madly out of my cell. I look for him in the neophyte school where he prepares candidates for initiation. I look for him everywhere, peering into every room. But I find him nowhere. Suddenly the young priest appears who helped me with my last preparations before initiation. Are you looking for Imar? He asks. Yes, Where can I find him? You won't find Emma here anymore. He left the temple in absolute desperation. He completely lost control of himself, for his faith was not in God above everything, but in a woman. He rushed away from here in a terrible state. None of us could stop him. He said he'd rather live with Negro tribes than go on living here in the temple because the savages would not disappoint him. The savages do not lie, they don't pretend to be different from what they really are, were his last words before he ran away. You'll never find Emma again. I stand stiff and silent with horror. Oh Emma! I have brought misfortune and despair on you too. The hell within me suddenly becomes 100 times more horrible because of this news. And still I know the young priest is wrong. I will find Emma again. If not in this life, then in a future one. Everything passes away, only true love never dies, and this wonderful love that stands above and beyond all differences of sex, this love of spiritual unity, will with absolute certainty lead us, Emma and me, back together again. I return to the palace knowing only one thing for sure, that I must die. Even if I were not a priestess, even if I were not initiated, I would not be able to go on living, but now that I know I have pulled down my best friend into hell with me, my mental torture becomes unbearable. All my thoughts and all my feelings balk at the thought of going on living. I want to destroy myself, and again I make a supreme effort to leave my body. But I can't. I can't die. I must go on carrying within me the fire that's burning me up and destroying my nerves. I can't flee from myself. Down completely exhausted to seek relief and rest a bit, I feel as if a mountain were weighing down upon my breast. I can scarcely breathe. Before my closed eyes I see blinding fire and flames, red flickering flames like the hair of a strange man. Like the shabby mane of the lions. The lions! Exclamation mark. Yes. The lions, I will go to them. And I'll dress myself as if preparing for a chariot ride. The keeper lets me go to the lions, because he knows that ever since my initiation my father has allowed me to go out riding with the lions alone. I go to my lions. They greet me with lowered head and with wrinkled nostrils. They smell a strange scent about me, they notice a strange and foreign emanation clinging to me. I go to Shimmer and stroke his head. Sugar lets out a loud growl, slowly drawing himself up ready to leap, rage and jealousy blaze in his eyes, and the instinct of self-preservation awakens within me. I hurl my will against Sugar just as I used to guide him with my will soft hyphen power during our chariot rides. But with a shiver of horror I realize I can't hurl my will anymore. My will is lame and dead, and the lion leaps. As I turn to run, in a flash I see 3 horror-struck people running toward me, Thistha, Boga and the Keeper. With all my might I run out of the court of lions. I feel the hot breath of the lion upon my neck, I feel its muscle touching me. And then a blow upon my head, but I keep on running, I see a door through which I must run into an area where the lion will have no more power over me, and in the door I see the fine, pale figure of my mother. Mother. I cry and run on breathless because I know I'll be safe in her arms. Mother awaits me with her sweet smile and with open arms. Making an extreme effort, I run to her. And fall in her arms. The lion disappears, I am saved. Then everything is dark and I know only one thing, I am in the arms of my mother who helped me over the threshold. I feel good. I rest. I revel in the love of my mother whom I haven't seen for so long, I revel in the peace of love. Suddenly a great indefinable power draws my consciousness in some direction and I awaken. I'm lying on a sarcophagus and don't feel my body. My consciousness is hazy, I only know that I want to get up but can't. Then I see Tahotep and his deputy standing near me, and it is Tahotep who softly, gently holds me back. I must remain prone. I am in my spiritual body which is still connected by the magic thread to my material body of flesh and blood and bone. My body lies embalmed in the sarcophagus, and I'm lying on it, in the same position, in my spiritual body. Tahotep and his deputy are near me, I see them in their spiritual body. See the glowing centers of power which their eyes have built up in their material bodies and with which they look out into the material world. Tahotep's two centers of power now emit a bluish phosphorescent light upon me, into me, penetrating my entire being, and sleep overcomes me. The hall and the two high priests disappear. Again I rest in my mother's arms. Now I realize I'm not resting in her arms, but in two streams of power which once had built up her arms as well as her whole body and radiated out of her body as love. These forces are carrying me and filling my tortured soul with love, peace and a feeling of security. Suddenly an unpleasant sound yanks me out of this. A sharp report which my spiritual ears first perceive is a blow. Seeking the cause, I notice it's a snapping sound as a slave driver cracks his whip at regular intervals. He's doing it to keep slaves in step as they pull my sarcophagus, which slowly slides along on rails like a sled. I must have just left the palace. I want to jump up but I can't. I can't move my legs at all. From my neck to the tips of my feet I am bound tightly. I lie there as if I were chiseled out of a single block of stone, my hands crossed over my breast, my legs stretched out straight, parallel to each other. In this position I can only look upward and forward. In the direction of my feet I see the shiny, sweaty backs of men, bent over forward, as they pull me on with rhythmic steps. Over their backs in the distance, I see a building of white stone, in its side a dark black spot like an open door. With its glistening white walls, the building contrasts sharply with the dark blue sky. As the men pull me onward, it slowly comes nearer, and the dark spot gets larger. I look up to the sky that is so dark blue it almost seems black. Two big birds circle silently over me, storks? Or cranes? Now the stone building is very near, and the dark spot is very big. Yes. It really is an opening. Oh, now I know. We're in the city of the dead. I'm being hauled into a tomb. The men step into the opening and disappear in the darkness. Now the black opening slides over my head. And after the blinding sunshine, the world around me is suddenly dark, everything disappears, absolute, inky darkness covers me. Unspeakable horror grips me, and in my heart I suddenly call out to Tahotep, how long? How long must I lie imprisoned here? And now I clearly hear his voice, the voice of Tahotep telling me the inexorable, immutable sentence, 3,000 years. Monstrous horror, despair and fear seize me, holding me as in a vice, and out of this fear there suddenly appears again the monster that is the expression of the law of matter. I see his deathly, satiric ugly face grinning at me, his trenchant glance boring deep down into me and tying me to the mummy that once was I. Then the monster speaks to me, so now you are in my power. You see, the highest and the lowest are always reflections of each other. Perfection resting within itself and eternal rigidity are two sides of the same divinity. You wanted to become conscious in the perfection resting within itself, and now you have fallen into rigidity. Yes, the mortal remains of the initiates are embalmed by the priests in the temple so that the divine power radiated by their bodies can continue to be active, like a battery, for a long time. Their spirit is free, in their consciousness they aren't attached to the earth. But you have bound yourself to your body. By carnal love, you guided the divine power within you into your lower nerve centers and burned yourself up. In this way, your consciousness together with your spiritual body are bound to your material body, you are my prisoner forever. Whereas the spiritual body of the initiate, through the act of embalming, is attached to his mummy, his consciousness is in eternity, but you are exiled in infinity. Eternity is the eternal present, infinity is the eternal future which can never be reached and never becomes present. Eternity never had a beginning and thus will never have an end. Eternity is timeless present which has no past nor future. Infinity, however, means a falling out of eternity into the future, without a present. You wanted to take part in the spiritualization of the earth. Now, spiritualize this little lump of earth that was your body if you can. Ha! Ha, ha. The priestess is lying here, and her consciousness isn't more than a piece of stone. Now you're undergoing the first test of the initiation, in the condition of consciousness of matter with a human consciousness. Just try to get free if you can. You're my prisoner. You can't get away from me because you have become I. In your initiation you conquered me because I had to recognize in the face of your divinely spiritual consciousness that I could not exist without the self. Thus I had to admit that I am you. But now it's the other way round, you in your consciousness have become matter. You have identified yourself with your body and are nevertheless spirit like I am, namely, the spirit of matter. Therefore, you have become I. You're my prisoner in infinity. In darkness. Imprisoned in this corpse which you were and which because of the embalming can't decay to allow you to go free. It will be your punishment to watch how this mummy, that now preserves your beauty because of the embalming process, will gradually shrink and become the image and likeness of me. You wanted to be immortal in the spirit of eternity, and you have become imperishable in this mummy into all infinity, into infinity. Infinity. I am powerless. I must listen. I lie there with my spiritual body indissolubly bound to my mummy. In desperation, I attempt to escape into unconsciousness, but I cannot. I must lie there completely conscious, without having the vaguest idea about time as it flows on past me. Time. What are you, O time? You exist only to the extent that we human beings are unhappy. In happiness there is no time, our consciousness stands still. The concept of time disappears. Only when happiness is over do we suddenly realize that while our consciousness was hovering tunelessly in the eternal present, time was rushing onward. Time begins with our fall from happiness, from paradise. But unhappiness too knows no time, for the more unhappy we feel, the slower time goes by, minutes seem hours, and in our moments of deepest despair, when sufferings and torture are unbearable, every moment becomes an infinity, time freezes. Oh, how right Satan is! The highest and the lowest are as alike as to twins, just like reality and its reflection, appearance. Happiness is timeless eternity, and the opposite, unhappiness, is endless time, infinity. I lie there and have nothing, absolutely nothing, with which to compare or measure time. Oh, tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now I understand your truth that recognition is only possible when he can compare. How can I know how much time has passed when I can't see the sun, this divine timepiece? When I have no idea what kind of an experience of time a day represents in this darkness. What is there to show me time when nothing happens, when only solidified darkness reigns around me? How can I know anything about time when I no longer have a heart which once measured the rhythm of life in my breast and now with its pulse could give me an idea of time? Have I been lying here for a few minutes and does it already seem an eternity? Or weeks? Years? Or centuries? Millennia? What is a minute and what is a millennium? How could I possibly know the difference? The feeling of horror and fear refuses to leave me for a single moment. I no longer have lungs with which to draw deep breath, with which to draw fresh power from the eternal source, with which to measure time by their breathing. I cannot look in any direction for help for my tortured soul. The tortures and sufferings know no end. No end. No end. Mist and reawakening. Time ran across the face of the great cosmic clock, along the circumference of the gigantic wheel of creation. Ever onward, even though I had not the faintest idea it was passing. It seemed to me I had been lying there for eons and eons, stiff and rigid. As if the tortures of hell would never end. When finally a moment did come in which I felt a force approaching me. A force greater and stronger than the bond which held my consciousness to my mummy, and which, now completely dried and shriveled, had become the horrible image of the spirit of matter. This new force was drawing me irresistibly in some direction. After all the sufferings and tortures of hell, I lost consciousness. Two people, related to me in their souls, united and gave me the opportunity to inherit a body corresponding to the nature and degree of my far-fallen consciousness. Because I had fallen as a woman, I had to be born again and again as a woman until I reattained the level from which I had fallen. I came into surroundings where I met only semi-conscious people.